This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
A Gal Media property. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Wake up!
All right, good morning. Happy Thursday to you. It is Wake Up Call, SB Nation Radio. All right, COVID-19 has taken a lot of things away from us that we hate. We didn't get a March Madness this year. Our NBA playoffs were altered. We didn't get the Masters in April that we liked. We didn't get the Kentucky Derby on the first Saturday in May. But maybe COVID-19 did take away something that many of you have been complaining about for years and years, so I don't want to hear it when you get to August and it's not kicking around anymore. There's a report from Adam Schefter that the Cowboys-Steelers preseason opener at the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio is canceled. So preseason football could be altered because of COVID-19. Now, let me just say, many of you have been complaining about this forever, how much you hate preseason football and how you wish it would just trim down. Maybe we'll get more regular season games and we don't really need as many preseason games as we keep saying we do. But here's why it could also be affected. It's not just the Hall of Fame game. That's an extra game on the preseason schedule. There's another report that says all the NFL teams that have not been able to go to their training facilities around the country. In fact, even if you're a little bit more open of a state than others, everyone's going to be doing it the same day. Now, that day for training camp is looking like about July 28th. And so if you have all of the teams report to training camp July 28th, then obviously the Steelers and the Cowboys weren't going to play a week later in Canton, Ohio. They would have gotten an earlier check-in time for training camp for that game. But everybody's going to be starting on the same time, and it looks like the NFL is willing to take two preseason games off the calendar in order to A, start the season on time, and B, allow teams to really progress in camp, because they haven't been able to do any workouts at all, obviously, throughout the entire time with rookie camp and no OTAs, no mandatory camp, none of that stuff. So preseason games are going to go out the window. They may be down to two. I would be very, very surprised if it's even two. I think the NFL knows that the bread and butter of the season is going to be when it kicks off the regular season on time and goes all the way through a full 17 weeks. But preseason, I would be very surprised if we even get two games. And if it's two games, it's going to be how quickly can you get here and out of here as fast as possible. But we never liked preseason games in the first place.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this is Canada's very own Bryan Adams, right? From 1985?
You know
it. The number one hit of 1985. We're going back because on this date, the Monday Night Football crew was announced for the upcoming season. Frank Gifford was back on the mic. Joe Namath was going to be in the booth, and the one and only O.J. Simpson was going to be joining them for the trio for the Monday Night Football season of 1985.
God, I wish I paid more attention.
Me too, right? I wish I had a crystal ball that I could look into and see where everything was going to be headed for one particular O.J. Simpson. The 1985 Monday Night Football season, though, was pretty memorable if you go back. First of all, you had the Bears, of course, who were dominating the NFL until when they got to their December 2nd game against Miami. They were 12-0 going into that game, and they lost. And it was the highest rated Monday Night Football game ever. It got a 46% share, a 29.6 rating, if you know all of that, the other lingo. And thanks to the New England Patriots, who made a wild card run to the Super Bowl, we were denied a rematch of that game in Super Bowl 20 in New Orleans because the Patriots upset the Dolphins. He squished the fish in the AFC title game. So the Bears went on to win the championship, but they had their only blemish was the December 2nd Monday night game against the Dolphins down in Miami.
Where the
72 Dolphin guys were cracking or popping champagne and smoking cigars.
If there was a real threat, it was that one at that time. Now, the Patriots obviously went 16-0, and that became a bigger threat because they had lost the final game of the Super Bowl. But that Bears team did look very, very unbeatable back in 85. God, I mean, very unbeatable.
The defense was insane.
Insane. But also the Bears, Monday Night Football wasn't their own, you know, they had another game on Monday Night Football, which the Fridge scored a touchdown against the Green Bay Packers in October. And that set the William Refrigerator Perry, a Clemson star, becoming a household name. He was in tons of ads and made himself a lot of money in advertising. He was a very lovable character. And Mike Ditka put him in the backfield. He scored a touchdown. He even scored a touchdown in Super Bowl 20, much to Walter Payton's dislike, if you will. There was also one of the most memorable moments of 1985 on Monday Night Football was when Lawrence Taylor got hit by Joe Theismann. Remember that one? Where Theismann broke his leg and Taylor jumped up basically screaming for medics.
Was that in 85 as well?
That was in 85.
My Lord.
November 18th, Washington against the Giants, where the Redskins won 23-21, but that nobody really remembers much about that game other than Lawrence Taylor freaking out that he may have killed Joe Theismann. So those three things happened in the Monday Night Football year of 1985, but we celebrate this day in June that the announcing team of O.J. Simpson, Frank Gifford, and Joe Namath would be in the booth. It was the only year, by the way, that they were all in the booth together. It was Namath's only season in the booth. I think O.J. lasted, what, it was another year after that?
I think O.J. lasted one more season after that.
Yeah, and then you got the, down the road, in the late 80s, you got the combination of Gifford, Al Michaels, and Dan Dierdorf, and that lasted a while. And then they, you know, but the Monday Night Football booth has, there's so many different combinations. The original of Howard Cosell, Frank Gifford, and Don Meredith was the Traveling Roadshow. They were the, at the beginning of the show's emergence onto the American pop culture scene, those three became as television stars. I mean, it wasn't just broadcasters. They became television stars. And you don't really find that anymore. I mean, maybe outside of Joe Buck, but Joe Buck, it's always funny because I never feel like Joe Buck has transitioned himself into pop culture, right? He has been just a sports culture guy, which is those of us in sports comment on him. Those of us who follow sports know him and have an opinion of him, but he doesn't, I don't think he generates buzz outside of the sports world. But, and you know, Bob Costas doesn't really do that, but Howard Cosell did. These guys did on Monday Night Football because it was a television show, and not only was it a television show, it was a very popular television show, even amongst people who didn't really care about the NFL. It was still something to watch on Monday nights, and it dominated the ratings. But as again, it's a new thing in the 70s, it takes off, and then after a while it becomes, okay, it's a Monday Night Football program, and you start adding, changing the booth up, and you add more sports guys into it, and that's what you got in 85. I wonder, again, I'm a kid back then, and I'm not paying attention to those kind of things. Namath and OJ with Frank Gifford, Gifford was a solid play-by-play guy, but there was no... I mean, how in the world did the three have a conversation? Like, in terms of, like, what were they all talking about? Because they're all players. I mean, Gifford, again, he did transition to a play-by-play guy. But Gifford was a great player. Simpson, of course, was a great player. Namath was, you know, Broadway Joe, for crying out loud. Those conversations must have been awesome. I don't know. Maybe they were, you know, Chet Forty, like, calmed him down and, you know, didn't let him get off the rails too much. But, I mean, all three of them must have had some serious stories to tell. I mean, Frank Gifford was a superstar at USC when he was in college. A superstar. And, of course, he was a star with the Giants. And of course, O.J. Simpson was O.J. He was O.J. at the time.
I mean,
he was,
and Joe Namath.
And Joe Namath was Broadway always Joe. Broadway. He's always Broadway Joe today. I mean, he's, you know, one of the biggest athlete playboys of all time.
That's why I wish I, you know, paid more attention to these. I mean, it's almost like I want to pay more attention to who is in the booth.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And I was like, kind of watch these guys and see, you know, hear some of the stories that they have to tell. I don't know. I mean, this was what, before OJ's acting career took off with the Naked Gun series?
I gotta think so. Yeah, I don't know the right timeline, but I would think it was probably before that.
Obviously before his infamy.
Yeah. I wonder if he was wearing Bruno Mali shoes back in 85.
Do you think he wore, you sported any gloves in the booth?
Right. Exactly. That Bruno Mali shoe thing is the most incredible twist to that OJ case, where he said he didn't like the shoes. Those were ugly shoes. He never owned a pair of shoes. And then they showed him a picture when he was working for NBC. And he goes, "You were wearing, look at the, wearing the shoes on the sideline of this game." And they're like, "Oh, maybe I did have a pair of those things." They're like, "You know, they're rare, right? You know, very, 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 very few people have Bruno Mali shoes. And you have a pair, and this is the murder scene, and the footprint is a Bruno Mali shoe. What a coincidence." So, which do you think was a bigger moment in 85? The Theismann hit or the Perry, refrigerator Perry hit it, scoring a touchdown?
God, I would say Theismann because
we still talk about it.
The Perry touchdown, that one's kind of forgettable because of the Super Bowl.
Right. Because he scored a touchdown in the Super Bowl,
we see that highlight a lot more often.
A lot more often. Because, again, Walter Payton didn't score a touchdown.
Yeah.
And in Walter, it's in, you know, a lot of times athletes will say, "I don't care. I'm just glad we got the win." Payton was really upset. Walter Payton was really upset he didn't score in that game because the Bears were scoring at will. I mean, it was 46-10.
It was almost everyone was getting a turn.
Yeah. And so, and you had like Jim McMahon, I think, did a quarterback sneak in one play because he didn't want to pitch it to Walter because he saw the defense coming at him. So he ended up scoring. It was like a number of different stories that the 85 Bears tell, but they all regret not getting Walter the ball. Like they all regret. You know, if they had known, they said certain circumstances, Jim McMahon said, "If I had known, I would have audibled to get the ball to Walter to get him in the end zone." But in the end, it was, you know, they still won the championship. But Refrigerator Perry's moment of scoring in that game against Green Bay escalates a defensive player into the super limelight of pop culture.
Yeah.
And he becomes this iconic figure
around the fridge.
Becomes the fridge around the world. But the Theismann hit is interesting because it's, again, if you know, even like the movie The Blind Side brought it up. It changed the offensive line. It changed the value of an offensive tackle for the blind, you know, protecting the blind side of the quarterback. It really made us look at that position a lot differently, and the Theismann hit had a lot to do with it. But it's one of the most gruesome moments in television, in sports television, because it was, What do they call it? It's where they replay something over and over again to the point of where you're just, stop doing that. I can't take it anymore. There's a term for it. I wish I could remember. But that's what they did. They kept showing it, and you're just, you know, blown away and mesmerized by it. But the Giants were a team. You think about how good of a game that was. The Giants would go on to win the Super Bowl the next year. So the Bears dominated 85, but the Giants were building up, their own super team that would win the Super Bowl the next year against the Denver Broncos. So, all right, coming up this hour, we'll get more on the NASCAR Bubba Wallace situation. A lot of people are calling out Bubba Wallace. And again, as we said yesterday, that's not the right play. That's not the right angle. If you did have a problem with where that investigation goes, it relies on NASCAR. We'll get to that coming up. And also back to the NFL and the business at hand in 2020. The preseason games look like they're going to be very minimal, if at all. And does that signal any concern for where the season is going? We'll talk about that next as we continue on Wake Up Call SB Nation Radio.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, when you need auto parts, O'ReillyAuto.com is just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com. Pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. They'll even bring it out to you curbside, or you can choose to have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Get your auto parts quickly with O'Reilly Auto Parts. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com today. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Phil Collins of Zeus Studio. I can't believe he's 35 years old. This is crazy.
I know.
Crazy. That song's still on the radio today.
Yeah, but it's usually on those Play Anything stations.
Yeah, but still, you can find it.
You can.
Yeah, you can still find it. All right, so the Hall of Fame game, Steelers and Cowboys, is canceled. That wasn't a surprise.
Bummer.
Too bad. August 6th was the date.
Because, it would definitely be one of those rematches of the Super Bowl.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Preseason Hall of Fame game, first game.
Yeah, can't
out of the
wait. Can't wait to see. Can't wait to see the fifth quarterback on the Steelers roster play for 8 minutes.
What are you talking about? It's not going to be Dak versus Ben.
I know, right? A showdown for the ages. The enshrinement ceremony, though, that's postponed too. So that's too bad, because I don't know how they're going to get the, like, what are they going to do for the people that are getting into 2020? They're going to do what the Hall of Fame of baseball did, which is just postpone it to next year.
Yeah, I guess.
So that's what they want. If that's what they're going to do, I mean, you don't want to deny the 2020 inductees a moment, right? You don't want to say, like, you know, hey, coronavirus, too bad, but you know, you're in. You know, we just put you in, and you can do a Zoom thank you to everybody that loves you, and that's
that.
It. Thanks. No, you don't want to do that. You want to give them their moment. You want to give them their bus. You want their families there. You want to do it the right way, right? That baseball's doing that. Baseball's taking the inductees. Derek Jeter leading the way. They're moving it into 2021.
Isn't NBA doing that as well?
I think, like, the NBA is doing it, because Kobe and Tim Duncan and all those guys getting in. That's a serious class.
What's kind of funny now is because they did Kobe a year earlier.
Right. That's right.
So now he'll actually go in when he's supposed to.
So that's what I'm assuming that's what the NFL will do here. And because, again, if they did it any other way, if they did it virtually, where, you know, a guy's in his home and he says, thanks, everybody, it's great to be honored to be in the Hall of Fame. It just would be awful. It would just be terrible. And it's not the right thing. These guys waited their whole lives for this. They played and had exceptional careers, whether they are coaches that are getting in, players that are getting in, they all deserve their moment for the Hall of Fame. But again, as I said at the top of the hour, the way the NFL is trying to conduct business now, because as we've been pointing out, all of these other sports that have been canceled / postponed have all had coronavirus really affect the bottom line, really affect the business, right? The NBA had the season postponed. The NHL, same thing. Major League Baseball was supposed to start, and they couldn't get underway. The Masters Golf Tournament has been postponed, right? The British Open has been canceled. Wimbledon took their big money and, you know, canceled their tournament. But the NFL has been able to play along with this because of the calendar. It's okay if we don't do a 3-day rookie camp here. We'll be fine if this mandatory camp in June doesn't go down. But we are now turning the calendar and getting close to when the NFL is going to have to do some serious business if they want their season to kick off on time. So now you're getting into July, where training camps were going to start. Now, the Steelers and the Cowboys were going to get an early start date because of this game on August 6th. So they were going to be able to report a little earlier than other teams. But most teams report, you know, at the end of July. So that looks like where the NFL is targeting, is saying, okay, we can get camps open July 28th. There's been no confirmation on this, but that's where the feeling is. They have to do it universally. Even if one state is just a little too hot right now and another state is wide open and fun, it's no problem. The very cases are low. Right now, they want every team to be able to check in at the same exact time. So what is that going to do for preseason games? All right. Now, if you report to camp July 28th about when you would report, there really isn't any reason to cancel or postpone preseason games. But for the NFL, is it wise to have four of these things when the coronavirus has not calmed down, did not disappear for the summer, or was not slowed down by the summer? Do you say, look, we don't want a regular season that's heavily impacted by the coronavirus, when we're not really sure, again, how this will play out for us when we play games? We're going to do all the safety measures that we possibly can. I think the league shuts down some of these preseason games. It gets it down to maybe two, possibly zero. Now, I know the coaches have always said, look, as fans, we go, get rid of the preseason. We hate the preseason, right? But as I've said many times, I don't think as fans we hate preseason because it doesn't provide entertainment. We don't like preseason because they charge full ticket prices to go to the games. If you're a season ticket holder, that ticket for an August preseason matchup with the Titans is the same price as your ticket at the end of the season when you're vying for a playoff spot. And that doesn't make any sense. And you end up giving them away to your friends, people who don't get to go to the games. You might go to a game and you still have to spend money on parking and concessions and stuff for a game that's relatively meaningless to you. Coaches have said many times, it's not meaningless to us. We do get valuable tape. We do understand our roster better. But then there are other coaches who have made the counter arguments and you don't really need four of these to figure it out. I mean, you're smart. You know what's going on in camp. You know who you want on your roster and who you don't. Right. But players have said, look, some players have said my career took off because I got into the league and I was a struggling player and I got that fourth game and that opened a door to another team and I got the right coaching and was in the right environment and was able to get on the permanent roster. All right. But again, here's the NFL, who has always toyed with the idea of reducing this anyway to try to expand the season to 18 games. Now may be in a position to have to do that. In 2020, though, will we miss it? Because our calendar has been so disrupted that when it comes to August, will we say, God, I used to hate them, but man, I really would love a preseason game on this Thursday night?
Well, I'm certain we're going to say that because, I don't know how many sports we're going to be. I mean, I'm assuming we're going to have enough sports to get us through it. But there's just something about football.
Well, there is, and that's what I've said to many people about preseason games, guys. People who told me over and over again the NFL should not have, should reduce its preseason game. I'm like, okay, then what do you want your August to have? Because you're not getting football's not, NFL season is not starting August 10th. Like, if you get rid of four preseason games, if you reduce it to two, the NFL season is not starting earlier. If you're going to add games, you're going to add it on the back end of the schedule. You're going to push the Super Bowl deeper into February. You're not starting in August. So to me, my answer to that has always been, turn your TV off and don't watch it. It's not invading you. If you don't like it, don't watch it. But you're not getting earlier football because preseason games are shut down or canceled. But in this case, I think we would. I think just because we have not been able to feel normal at all. We haven't felt like we've gotten back to normal at all.
Yeah.
Right? There's no normalcy. The late night shows are still doing them from home, right? I mean, like Jimmy Fallon is telling jokes to nobody. And sports, even when it's come back, it's not coming back like it normally does. The PGA Tour is getting positive tests. Caddies getting positive tests. Guys pulling out of tournaments because of that. We still don't have baseball. We still don't have basketball. All we have is plans. That's all we've been able to talk about is plans. If you get to August and there's a preseason game that was supposed to happen, if you're a Broncos fan and they were supposed to play, like, I don't know, the Chargers in a preseason game or whatever it was, and it was scheduled for this Thursday night in August, you'll miss it, man. You may hate it, but you'll miss it completely. Because if you had it, you'd feel like, okay, this is the sport that didn't get disrupted at all, maybe for a couple of mini camps, but they're going on as planned as best they can. But I would be blown away if there was two preseason games.
There's a sense of normalcy.
Right.
If football returns in the fall, okay, you know what? That's what's normal. And maybe this means that things are getting back to normal if we have football in the fall. Because, right now we still have no baseball. By the time football does, by the time the first preseason game comes, we should have a baseball game. We should be having basketball games or gearing up towards having a few basketball games. At least there'll be camp if they have that all figured out. But there's just that sense of normalcy, like, hey, things are back. And we're moving out of coronavirus, the age of coronavirus.
Yep, exactly. And we're going to talk to Matt Marshall in Orlando from the Orlando Sentinel next hour about college football, which I think is going to be very altered.
Just read all the reports. Are they going to even have it?
I know. That's right. I mean, the NFL is going to try to make it so that almost nothing is altered, right? Maybe, again, a few free preseason games, but they're really aiming for that kickoff exactly when it's on the schedule and a season that doesn't get disrupted by this. But college football is going to get altered. There's going to be games off the calendar. There's going to be teams that are going to say, look, we appreciate UT Martin, you coming in to play for $1 million, but we're canceling that game because it's too risky. But the NFL wants to keep it exactly the same.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we're going back to 1985 on Throwback Thursday. On this date, Monday Night Football team announced Frank Gifford, O.J. Simpson, and Joe Namath. They would be in the booth for one season. It was Namath's only season in the booth. O.J. Lasted another year, and Frank Gifford had a long, long history with Monday Night Football. But we take you back to 1985. Duran Duran, View to a Kill. This is the James Bond movie with Christopher Walken in it.
Yes.
That's right. And Grace Jones, the model actress.
She in this too?
Yes, she plays his partner.
This was a Roger Moore one, right?
Yeah, Roger Moore. Yeah. Exactly. So, 1985. So, more fallout from the NASCAR Bubba Wallace noose incident at Talladega. So, I knew this was going to happen. So, yesterday, give you the quick timeline. You had the finding of the noose. You had the outcry of it by NASCAR. You had Bubba Wallace support on Monday. Tuesday, it didn't take long for the FBI to determine it was garage pull. And then I said, look, let this simmer a little bit, and it's going to get politicized, and here come the pundits, and here come the critics, and here comes the altering of the story to fit a political narrative. And again, it's just a reminder of what exactly happened here before the talking heads in the political world shape it to something that it wasn't, or shape it to something to be even more than it was. That's always going to be the case here in a highly politicized atmosphere that we live in, where people are going to take people who have an agenda, especially a political agenda, take a story and then they twist it. And what they try to do is they try to make the narrative fit so that it's like a Cliff Notes version for an audience that wasn't paying attention in the first place. So that down the road, depending on who you're talking to, the story becomes, wasn't there a noose hanging in a garage for an African American driver at a NASCAR event? I mean, somebody put a noose there trying to intimidate him everybody blew this out of proportion. In fact, they planted a noose in the garage and made a big story out of it, made a big deal out of it during Black Lives Matter. You worry about the two polarizations of this because you don't want the story to change. And this is where Bubba Wallace, the driver and the person, is going to get caught in the middle. And there's an unfairness to this because the story has to be consistent, and if I feel like in the sports world, we have to be responsible before the political hacks who don't pay attention to sports, who don't watch NASCAR at all, who didn't know who Bubba Wallace was to begin with, take the story and run with it in a different direction and sort of quote unquote change history. The NASCAR team of Bubba Wallace found this noose, not Bubba Wallace. He was in his trailer. The team pulled into the garage, saw the noose hanging. Now, according to Bubba Wallace in an interview, his crew member, who's also African American, went up and down the garages to see how many of the garages had that particular rope hanging from the garage. He didn't find any. Now, there's a conflicting report that says there were a couple that were tied like that. So he reported it to NASCAR. He brought it to NASCAR's attention. Now, why? Well, here was Bubba Wallace making a stand, driving a Black Lives Matter car at Martinsville, and demanding NASCAR ban the Confederate flag being flown at racetracks. So he has put himself into the public arena by these, by the support of Black Lives Matter and his stance on the Confederate flag, which was supported by NASCAR, who did ban the Confederate flag. By fans flying it at events. So you know that you're curious, you're probably wondering what the fallout is going to be. If you're on his team, you see this rope hanging from a garage door, it's shape of a noose, you find that there's not a lot of these around the garage area. You don't know, because that wasn't your stall in October of 2019, so you don't know it was there before. You just open the door and there it is. So they reported to NASCAR. It was NASCAR that went to Bubba Wallace. It was Steve Phelps who went into the trailer nearly in tears and spoke to Bubba Wallace about this. So as we talked about yesterday on the show, it's so easy for a certain segment of the population to jump to this is just like Jussie Smollett. This is just like that actor from Empire that faked his own assault at 2 a.m. in Chicago and during a polar vortex. by white guys wearing MAGA hats when it turned out he paid two guys to do it for him, two Nigerians to do it for him. But that's not what happened here. This was not planted. Right? Now, listen, if it was planted by the team, right, Bubba Wallace would get vilified for this, even if Wallace had no idea. Let's say somebody on the team, some crew member said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to pull into the garage. We're going to say we found this, and it's going to create a whole bunch of problems. But you know what? We're going to get attention to this. That's not what happened. Right? That's the rope has been hanging there. The noose was hanging there since October of 2019. But they didn't know what it was. Now, they didn't know, even if they knew it was a door handle, right, a door pulley, they still didn't know if somebody went, yeah, it's a door pulley, but it's also a noose for the 43 team. So they get the message. They didn't know. So they reported it to NASCAR. If you want to find fault in this investigation, it's on NASCAR, but I'll get to them in a minute. So Bubba Wallace gets this news from NASCAR. Now, what is he supposed to do with that? Is he supposed to conduct his own investigation? Is he supposed to tell NASCAR, nah, it's hogwash. No, I don't buy this story for a second. I think you all misread what that was. I don't think that was a noose at all. I don't think that was anything directed to our team at all. He's got the president of NASCAR in his trailer telling him, hey, we found this and it's serious and we're appalled by it. And he's in tears over it because he knows that somebody within his organization, somebody that works for somebody associated with the organization, planted this and he's worried about it. And Bubba Wallace has to be worried about it. So Wallace does what he's supposed to do. He's supposed to publicly say, this is not going to intimidate me. We're not going to stand for this. This is cowardly. He does all of the things that he did. And all the team supported him on Monday. And they, you know, were behind him. And I stand with Bubba and all of that. So here comes the FBI and they say it's a garage pull. And look, it's an embarrassing look. Because they went around, they did the research on it. Yep, it's been there since last fall. No, it was not done so that the number 43 team the following year can show up at the stall and see it firsthand. They don't know why somebody tied it like that. There are other garages where it wasn't tied like that. But was it done maliciously with the intent to send a racist message? No, it doesn't look like that at all. So is it embarrassing for NASCAR? Sure. When the FBI sends 15 people down there and it takes, well, I don't know, half a day for them to talk to all the people. Wood Brothers Racing was in that garage stall in October. They participated in the investigation. They said, yep, yeah, it was there, you know, 6-8 months ago, whatever it was. Now, the garage assignments that were given are based on where you are in the point standings. So this was not even manipulated by somebody in NASCAR that went, hey, you know that stall with the noose hanging, make sure the 43 gets it. No, that's you get the garage based on where you are, so nobody couldn't even anticipate that the 43 would have gotten that stall. It's a misunderstanding. And Wallace, to his credit, despite earlier going on CNN and saying it's a noose and we still don't really know and sort of still kind of stirring the pot a little bit, he at least came out and said, all right, this was a misunderstanding. And you know what? He said something which I wish most of NASCAR would have said initially, which was, we are relieved. This was not what we thought it was going to be. We are thrilled. This is not what it's going to be. But NASCAR is at fault in this regard. How many organizations would have immediately assumed the worst about one of their employees? I mean, that was a quick jump for NASCAR to make. To admit to a driver that we may have a racist element within our midst that was willing to throw everything away for this. And instead of saying, you know what? We're going to really look into this because we shouldn't be making those comments as a company that we have people willing, again, to throw everything away to do this. But they didn't. They didn't. They went right to 10. You know, they went right to Bubba Wallace and said, my God, this is horrible. This is terrible. Do I think that there was PR manipulation to in a time where, you know, Black Lives Matter is making its voice heard? And it, again, there's both sides of the political aisle making comments on that. I don't think so. I really don't. I know it sounds, maybe I'm sounding naive in terms of how manipulative it is, but I think NASCAR just made a mistake. I just think they made a mistake. I think they jumped the gun on something. I think they were nervous about not jumping the gun on something. I think that had a lot to do with it. And they had to let the FBI do their due diligence. They had to let the outside agency come in and make that statement for them, even if they kind of knew exactly what was going on before the FBI released its report. I think NASCAR just went too fast when they should have said, stop, let's get the deal. What exactly is that? Okay, let's talk to somebody who's at the track. Let's talk to some other people. How long, you know, what do you make of this? Somebody at Talladega may have said, oh, I'm sorry, that's been there forever. I'm sorry. Well, has it been there forever? Let's go talk to the team that was here last time. Do you remember seeing any of this? I mean, they could have done all of that. But here's the thing. How many people would have accepted NASCAR's explanation for it? And because of that, isn't that where NASCAR is in terms of the public eye? That they're not going to get nearly the benefit of the doubt in terms of investigation that the FBI is going to do. The FBI comes in. That was not a hate crime. That was not a noose directed at Bubba Wallace's team. That's just a guy who made a rope look like a noose, using it as a garage pull. We did our investigations, been here for a while. There's no ill intent on it whatsoever. That comes from the FBI. That's one thing. Now imagine if NASCAR had said that right afterwards. Like right after the incident. What if NASCAR had said that? What if NASCAR had put its report out right before the race on Monday? What if NASCAR had put its report out right after the race on Monday? How many skeptical media members would have saw that and said, no. You owe us a better explanation than that, NASCAR. You don't exactly have the solid ground to stand on when it comes to racial investigations. A lot of people would have done it. Fair or unfair, doesn't matter. A lot of people would have done it. So what you're seeing now is people wanting to take the Bubba Wallace story and twist it to form, again, whatever narrative they want. This is on the same level as Jussie Smollett. It's a hoax. It was perpetrated by the team. It was perpetrated by Bubba Wallace. Those facts are not true. It was a conspiracy by NASCAR to do what they, to get a moment like they did on Monday. There's really no evidence for that either. This was just an investigative blunder by the organization. But it also isn't, on the flip side, still something that we have to look into. We still have to find that guy that tied it that way. We still have to look into his background and his heart to see whether he has any racist intent. Because I don't think that's there either. I think the guy who tied that rope the way he did it. I don't think he was sending a message. I don't think he was trying to make sure one day the 43 team was going to use that stall and he was going to get his, you know, get his voice heard on that. No. I think he just tied it the way he tied it. And that was it. Maybe he was trying something new. Maybe he was doing it because he felt like it would be easier. I have no idea, but I don't think there was any racist intent by that individual who did that. So for the two political sides who are going to take it and run with it in a different way, let's always remember that there are facts here. There are inconvenient facts and there are convenient facts, but there are facts. And it took one day for this story to get on all the news programs, to be twisted in an election year and a political climate that's red hot, into whatever they want. But those of us who follow sports, those of us who cover sports, should always remember exactly how this played out. There were things that were done correctly, like the drivers backing Bubba Wallace at a time where we did not know, in a time where an investigation wasn't conclusive. And there were things that should have been done better, like NASCAR actually looking into this immediately instead of jumping the gun and jumping right to the media to say how appalled they were without really understanding what exactly happened. But I don't want this story to be twisted, and but I know it's going to be. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Love to hear from you. Or 800-224-2004 if you want to get your comments in on that as we continue on Wake Up Call.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, it is Wake Up Call, SB Nation Radio. Glad you could be with us. We get Prince. 1985 is the Throwback Thursday year. This hour of Wake Up Call, presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. The Monday Night Football crew of OJ, Joe Namath, and Frank Gifford announced for ABC. A good year for Monday Night Football in terms of memorable moments. Not good for Joe Theismann, who suffered a broken leg that year.
He probably wants to forget about that game.
But we had one of the highest-rated football games of all time between the Bears and the Dolphins in December of 85. And the Fridge scored a touchdown against Green Bay in October. But 1 year ago, 1 year before in 84 on this date, Purple Rain released one of the greatest albums of all time. So glad we had Prince breaking us in a year for the 85. But 84, I had Purple Rain. Who didn't have Purple Rain?
Who didn't?
When they were back? Who didn't? One of the highest purchased albums. Not Thriller level, but still another album you probably needed to have if you grew up in the 80s. It's Wake Up Call, SB Nation Radio.